Hello everyone. We are starting with chapter 13, HR policies, practices and work design. So a few of the learning outcomes that I would like to share right in the beginning are the various selection practices that HR function undertakes in today's day, the various learning and development initiatives and programs that are initiated within the organizations, the performance management system, the career management system, the various practices for managing the quality of work life. So these are the learning objectives that are there in front of us for the next 1.5 hours. Let's deep dive into each of these objectives one by one. So let's start by understanding what Just understand the introduction part of it, and then we will deep dive further on. So first thing that what comes to our mind when we talk about HR policies. So HR policies, different kinds of, structures, this different types of policies, different types of practices that are there, different processes which are being managed and maintained by HR. Okay, so we must understand that for overall organizational effectiveness, the key HR policies and practices should be designed in the most effective manner. I think almost all of you would agree with me that each and every process has to be conducive enough to be able to run well within the organization, for the organization, and for the people of the organization. Right, so HR policies are set out obligations, standards of behavior, and documented disciplinary procedures. Yeah, these are certain norms that comes to our mind when we talk about HR policies. It also the benefit of having set HR policies within the organization are also the compliance factor. So that all the employees who joins in the organization has to abide by the entire processes and practices, and they sign up in the beginning of their employment that these are the certain code of conduct, these are the certain documentation, these are the certain policies that each of them would comply by. The key HR processes and practices lies in the area of predominantly selection, training, learning and development initiatives, performance evaluations, career management system, and the management of quality of work life. So these are the main key processes that we are going to focus on in the next sometime from now. So when you talk about human resource processes and policies, the first thing that we talk about is selecting the right person for the right job and at the right time. So that's the one of the predominant factor that comes into our mind when it comes to selecting the right person. And they also ensure, so now having processes, as we have spoken earlier, that it brings out the disciplinary process within the organization which the employees have to abide by. And it ensures that each and every employee is following the structured documentation that is required by the organization. So the first thing that we are going to discuss now, the first process that we are going to discuss is the selection process. As I mentioned, that selecting the right person at the right time for the right job. Okay, and it is highly, highly critical for an organization and even for an employee for that matter, for the employer as well as the employee. It is very, very critical because it is a huge investment of time and money. Right, so it is one of the most important function of HR. A single wrong fitment can result into huge wastages and the effort of the managers within the organization. So imagine the amount of time that they spend. So now you can imagine, now especially if you see now we have actually bridged the gap to quite an extent, but I remember traditionally when we talk about the selection process, it is very, very tedious. It goes through multiple rounds of interviews, the multiple tests that you undergo, finally all kinds of scrutinization happens, and then the offer is given to the prospective employee, And then over a period of time, sometimes the person, the prospective employee may or may not join as well. If he gets a counter offer, he joins somewhere else, says no after about a wait period of about a month. And depending on the seniority of the person, it may, you know, the length of notice period may vary from, right, from 30 days to 90 days as well. So hence, it is a lot of investment in terms of time, money, and effort. And there are also costs which are associated with it, with which comes along with incorrect fitment. You know, right from its cost of hiring, cost of training, cost of rehiring, and then again retraining it, and then putting them finally on the floor. Okay, so it's a huge investment when it comes to this process of selection. So selection process is typically followed in the same way which is followed in most of the organizations. You do not see too many differences. Most of it is a very, very similar process, and a little bit of here and there, you'll find some changes, but mostly they follow the same pattern. And you'll find little modifications, little short of some tests. Some may do a little lengthier tests. Some may do a little more, put little more, impact on the case analysis or something. And then some people might, in addition, some test, or maybe reduce one or two tests. So those are the kind of changes, but not majorly too much difference. But most of it is followed by it's followed by across organizations. So I'm sure now it's become even more prevalent that, you know, every application process for a job is goes through an online application. So when you talk about application and resume screening, filling up of the application form, the resume screening form mostly goes, you know, hand in hand as ideal initial screening tools. So most of the organizations nowadays insist on an online application, because that becomes much more easier, because that goes through one person to other person very, very easily. You do not have to randomly, you do not have to keep moving from one paper to the other. It is a simple sending one PDF from one mailbox to the other. And, you know, it's online applicable. Wherever the person is, the person can conduct an interview and give his feedback. So hence online application form has a process of screening is become more prevalent in today's times. So as we mentioned, that most of the applications has become online now for the sake of easy process of sending each other, giving timely feedback, and investing less amount of time compared to the complete offline process. So when you talk about the application and resume screening, so the first thing that the HR team should take care of is the kinds of questions that are included in the form. So any kind of sensitive questions needs to be avoided. For example, like caste, creed, race. So those kind of genders, even nowadays, these needs to be avoided and needs to be under strict scrutinization. So if at all it is there for some purpose, it has to be under a lot of process jurisdiction where people have to take authorization to put those. So hence, these kind of sensitive questions are better to get avoided in the selection process. So there are a few tests that they follow while you talk about screening as part of the process of selection. So first is the written test. So main written test would include intelligence and cognitive ability test, because that's considered by far the most successful test ever, because that test the intelligence of the persons and understands whether the person is able to comprehend and able to have cognitive ability well in place for the job requirement. So hence, they are particularly good and are viewed as one most selection process which is used for measuring the liability of any particular weaknesses, if any, it kinds of rules out there. So hence the intelligence and cognitive ability test is considered to be one of the topmost written tests. The second one is your personality test. So when you talk about personality tests, there are two things, two traits which are being most considered. One is your the trait of conscientiousness, and the second one is the trait of positive self-concept. Now, when you talk about conscientiousness, this talks about your ability to have a judgment of right or wrong, whether you're doing right, and you're able to find out a solution if you have done something wrong, and you need to and you are able to do correct take. Necessary and corrective actions for correcting that. And the second one is about positive self-concept. How confident are you about yourself? So these are the two personality traits which have been considered to be most important while predicting a job performance. Then comes your performance simulation test. Now, what do you mean by simulation? As you hear the name simulation, what is the first thing that comes to your mind? So it involves subjecting individuals to a complete simulated environment. Simulated means a complete imaginary situation where you are given a particular situation and you need to be completely imagining that this is how I am. And simulation does not have to be, there are simulations which are completely online and built over technologies, but they can be as basic as, say, I have recently done one training program for a very large manufacturing setup, and there the expectation there was that people needs to get aware about the concept. So that how they would when it's an ambiguous situation, when things are not going the way we expect, how is it that they can put roll up their sleeves and actually do the needful and get the work going. So that's the problem solving ability that they were looking at, even from the people from who are working in the factory level. So I was in a big fix that how do I bring in that to a virtual platform, when people are working from home. And imagine people who are working literally on the factories, they are not very tech savvy and they are not very tool savvy, as I call it. So it was very important for me to make them understand what it is they should be able to visualize that simulation and then accordingly act on it. So with lot of pondering, lot of preparation, I have put together a process where they had to work out on a simulation, considering that they are in a pandemic, they are in a post-pandemic recovery situation, and they have lost their jobs, and they have to come up with a small business along with their colleagues or friends in a group. So they were divided into breakout rooms, and everybody had to talk together and all. So that itself is a simulation where they visualize themselves in a scenario where they have been subjected to that scenario, that they're jobless, they do not have enough capital, they do not have enough resources with them, but they're starting a business from the scratch. So that also is considered to be a simulation. So one is subjecting them the candidate for simulations. The two best known performance simulation tests are work samples and assessment centers. So when you talk about work samples, the work samples can be collected various ways. You can give them a case analysis, you can give them a scenario and ask him to take actions as per the situation, ask what if he would have been in that place, what are the decisions that he's going to take. Then you can actually observe him in a certain competencies that are called for that requirement. The second one is your assessment center, which is again one of the foolproof. I have been an assessor myself for the last 10 plus years. And while we do assessment centers, a lot of people still say that, sometimes it rules out a lot of subjectivity from the mind. Because it's various assessors who are assessing them, there are different parameters that you're assessing the candidates on. And over and above that, you're also doing the integration together, and you're collaborating every assessor together, and you're giving a joint collaborative report. So it's not one person's opinion what it matters here. So it's 2 to 3, 4 assessors who's giving this. So this is what is called as your assessment center. And the situational judgment. So that is, you're giving the situation, you can, you know, as basic as you can hand over a situation in paper to the person and ask him to, you know, have go through it and observe it for a while and then come back and then you actually understand his judgment over the situation, that what he feels about it, what are the actions that he could have taken, what are some of the, you know, preventive measures that you could have taken to stop the situation or change the situation, and if at all it has happened, what are the, some of the corrective measures that he can take. So those are the kind of selection practices that are followed by various organizations. I hope that is clear to all of you. So these are the three best known selection processes, work sample, assessment center, and the third one is your situational judgment. Now, we spoke about all of this, and now we are talking about another written test, which is again one of the mandatories, I would say. In a lot of organizations, in multinational companies, this becomes a norm to complete. It's called as integrity test. So these tests have gained a lot of popularity over a period of time because it curbs down all kinds of unethical you know, thoughts that some people may come with along with the position. Okay, so they have increased its popularity over a period of time in most organizations, and they measure, and the measuring factors are dependability, carefulness, responsibility, and honesty. So these are the four things that you assess them on. Dependability: how dependable are you? If you are subject to a particular project, and the project is very, very critical to the organization, and how dependable are you to actually give 100% justice to that particular project, because it's very critical to the organization. So hence, your dependability is going to be one of the critical factors required here. How careful are you? How responsive are you? And how honest are you? So these are the four things that are being, the four factors that are being assessed through an integrity test. Then comes your interest inventories. Now, what do you mean by interest inventories? The moment you hear the term interest, what does it come to your mind? The first thing that comes to your mind is that, you know, how, what are our interests? What are the common interests? What are some of the things that we like to do, right? That's what comes to our mind. So these are such tests and are instruments that are designed to measure and assess the extent of a person's interest in or a preference for a various activity. For example, if you're a person who is have a high level of interest for trekking, you know, you will, so if the organization goes for, if your team decides to go for an outbound team building activity, you will be, you know, one of the person who will be taking active participation on it. And if somebody is not, is very, very, not at all attuned to a whole concept of walking out in the terrains and all of that, the person will take very, very less. So hence, that person will be subjected to a job which is more stationary, the person who likes outdoor, the person who likes, talking to people. So that those person will also, obviously, it will bring in the inclination of the kind of job that he's interested in. Okay, so that's called as your interest inventory. So now we come to the interviews, which is the most common selection practice, which has been very traditional as well. So most widely used across organizations, across the world. One of the most commonly used and easily available selection tool. And sometimes in some small organizations, when it's if it's a proprietorship firm or kind of a thing, it's just one interview and the person comes and the, you know, owner meets the candidate and the owner sees a lot of entrepreneurship skill in the person, see that he brings in a lot of ownership, he brings in a lot of technical expertise, and he gets hired within one interview itself. Okay, so it becomes one and only foolproof tool there. Okay, so there are various types of interviews that are there. Okay, which as I mentioned to you, the one that I gave you an example directly, the proprietor meets the candidate and he gives him the job. So that could be an unstructured one. Okay, so there could be interviews which are unstructured. There could be interviews which are structured, very well structured, process oriented, completely driven by a process, completely online, offline. But very, very structured. You know what is happening next very well in advance, all of that. The third one is behavioral event interviews, where you are subjected to a complete assessment on a situation, okay, and how you would behave in those situations. And the final one, which is your panel interview. Panel interview is generally very, very common for leadership roles, and where you have, you know, 5-6 people in the panel, and you're getting interviewed. So if you're not very cognizant about panel interview, suddenly going and meeting 5 different people and 5 different people with stark different in you know, experiences and stark different departments might face, you know, the candidate may find a challenge to crack that, those kind of interviews. So hence, panel interviews needs a lot of preparation as well. Then comes your ref check, reference check, which is without which we cannot, no matter how well we did in the test, no matter how well we were considered to be from the cognitive skills perspective, how well we did in our you know, intelligence tests, or you know, the other and the face-to-face interviews. We did very well, but finally, when the reference check has been done, the reference check came negative, and your whole screening goes for a selection, goes for a toss. So it is a process of an employer. What they do is they contact a candidate's previous employment in case of an experienced candidate. In case of a fresher, they might just contact the college or the institution where he or she has studied from. So they might just do a check on the previous job history, on the educational qualifications, and if at all any kind of an integrity issue with the person. How well did he do? Is he dependable? Is he, you know, how do you think he was? How do you think he's in playing, team playing? All these kinds of reference checks could be done from the previous organization or from the institution that the candidate comes from. So there are various challenges that are involved in this process, okay? Because it's not always very, very foolproof and very successful here. Because a lot of times what happens is that for an organization where the employee had worked in the past, for the organization, it's nothing much to gain actually from that, you know, reference. So hence, a lot of employees, what they do is ultimately they just turn out saying that, you know, we are not available, can you call later? And sometimes they might not, if the person has not left with a very good note, you might not get a very positive reference feedback as well. So hence, it is, you know, it might not prove to be 100% successful here. So what are the benefits of ref checks? So some of the benefits that the reference checks brings along is that they verify the truthfulness of the information that has been provided by the applicant. So it gives you a complete understanding that yes, this applicant has given you know, information that was true to his knowledge, and also it is factual. So once the reference check is done, so it is considered factual, and they kind of give a clean chit, and the candidate is on board. And the offer goes out to the candidate. So they check if the applicant has the right skills for the skill set for the job. Sometimes what happens, you may just do very well in the interview. You may have prepared yourself well. You may either, you know, you are aware, you have come through a reference, so you know what kind of questions you already got prepared. So all those kind of things can get ruled out, if at all, from the reference. Also, you get a validation saying that the skill sets that the candidate has already mentioned, that kind of claim to have with him or bring to the table, actually gets verified completely. So they can help predict success in his or her new job. So these are some of the benefits of having a reference check done. So it also has, preference check also has another thing in place, which is your medical checkup. So medical checkup is again another important thing, and especially after this COVID now, it's become even more important to have. So once the candidate has been found fit for the job, so if the knowledge, skill and attributes are competent enough to be able to be selected for the job. However, his final selection will always be dependent on a green signal on his medical fitness. So that's one of the pre-employment health checkups that has been done. Most organizations does it, and now it is globally, it will become mandatory. So most common types of learning programs that are there in organizations, existing organizations, newer organizations. So anybody who joins the organization goes through the induction training. So all of us are aware of this onboarding and induction So it involves learning, talks about the basics of the organization, who's who in the organization, what are the kind of products that we deal with, who are the management. All the information that is required for any person to get onto the organization and get his job started. It depends, it can vary from 2 days to 2 weeks. And in some organizations, the whole onboarding process could be a month long or could be even 3 months long, because you know it could be under a bud. They could have a mentor system or maybe buddy system, but most of it is in a unstructured organization and small organizations, it is mostly 1 or 2 days. The intent of the induction training is to get started in his role, and it covers a complete overview of the products and the services that the organization offer, and the kind of stories that the organization has to share, and the kind of some of the rituals that you follow in the organization. Let's say now completely organization is becoming completely boundaryless. We do not have a punch in punch out system and all of that, but there are still traditional organizations where you'll still see a regular punch in. If you have forgotten to punch your time in, you may just have to get ratified from your manager, you know, that you were present for that particular day. So still some organizations still follow some rituals. So all those needs to be imparted to the new joiner. So its intention is to get the person on board as quickly as possible. Then is your technical training. Let's say the whole organization works on a process like SuccessFactor or maybe Salesforce, and the person comes from a completely different background, and he has not worked under Salesforce. So what he has to do is he has to come and understand these technicalities of the software, how to work on it. So this is a complete technical training which teaches the skills required to design and develop and implement a particular job. Okay, so and support or operate a particular technology or related application, product or services. So anything to do with the software, anything to do with the technical front of it. So this is the technical training, which it is done in the initial stages only because the person needs to work on that particular technology. Okay, so related content here could be meeting the needs of modern technical workforce using blended learning. So it varies from job to job, and it is mainly a type of learning with the aim of training an employee on any technology aspects. So what are the do's and don'ts? What are certain things that you have to take care? So how do you extract the reports? How do you get your real-time reports? How do you put analytics around? So those are the kind of nuances that you get to learn from the technical training. I hope the technical training part is clear to all of you. Another most common type of training is that functional training. Now, what is the difference between functional and technical? So when you talk about technical more or less talks about the technology interface that we have, the platforms, the tools that you use. But functional is it's a term used to describe mostly, for the activities that describes your day-to-day life in your workplace. So what are the day-to-day activities that you do? What are some of the reports that you could be a simple report? What are some of the processes that you handle while you're doing a Monday meeting? So it emphasizes core strength and stability, basically. So these are just like how you exercise when you go to a gym, there are some basic exercises that you do regardless of whether you have to do it, you do your upper body, whether you have to do your lower body, you still do those exercises to build your core. Right. So that is called as so these are some of the activities. These are some of the trainings that you learn because to strengthen your core job, your main job. OK, so it gives strength to your core job. So it brings in stability and it helps an individual develop his function very, very effectively. And sometimes they are also called as a process training. Example, sales training for the sales employees. Okay, so those are some of your examples of functional training. Okay, now we will talk about the next type of training, which is your behavioral skills training, which has over a period of time gained a lot of popularity and a lot of importance across organizations. And it is also known as, it's very commonly known as BST, and which stands for Behavioral Skills Training. And it's a training package that utilizes instruction models, rehearsals, feedback in order to teach a new skill. Okay, and soft skills training aims to make individuals effective in their interpersonal interactions. So interpersonal interaction while you're a job is in many fold, right? Right from your interaction with your manager to your customer, to your peers, to your stakeholders. All of these requires a lot of soft skills, so that you can incorporate those and strengthen your ability to develop interpersonal skills across the organizations. Okay, so behavioral skills training, some of the examples of behavioral skill training is, say, problem solving, negotiation skills. All of these are your behavioral skills training. Okay, so where your interpersonal skills, all these are your behavioral skills training, which are required in various levels in the organization, right from top to bottom. Everybody requires behavioral skills, because in some organizations, and it is worth to do it that way. You are not only assessed on the numbers that you have contributed towards the business, but also the kind of behavior that you have displayed while you're contributing those numbers. Yeah, so while you are very good at your work and you've been substantially achieving your target over a period of time, but however, if you're not living the values of the organization, the customers do not have a great feedback, however your numbers are great, your team is not happy with you, you are having very high attrition. So as a manager, you might not be looked at with a very good lens there. Right, you may undergo a lot of questions around considering that your behavioral skills could be in question. Right, so hence behavioral skills training is very, very important and has gained a lot of popularity over a period of time. So here, some of the behavioral skills program, as I mentioned to you earlier, is that decision-making skills, your presentation skills, your communication skills, goal-setting abilities, ethics training, leadership training, team building, self-management, self-leadership, time management. All of these are some of the examples of your behavioral skills training. I hope all of them are clear. And I'm sure all of you must have come across these trainings. You might have had such programs done by a resource person also in the university. Training methods. There are various ways learning can be imparted and people can be developed and trained. So few of the training methods that are there existing in today's date are, one is your informal training. These are the training which are completely unstructured and unplanned. It can happen anytime. It does not require pre-planning. It does not require too much of arrangements. And it is easily adapted to the situation and individuals. For example, you have gone out 2 days of review to an external location. And then suddenly, in those discussions that you had while you had your review, team review, there were employees who were saying that we do not have any kind of team building sessions happening. This is the first time that we have come out and all of that, so we are not really worked together, we all have been working in silos. And suddenly the HR manager there or the learning manager there sees that there's an immediate need which is existing there in the team. They would really be happy if at all some small snippet of a training team building activity, if it is done, it could be really helpful. So there were no plans earlier. It was only the review and the lunch together and dinner together, all that was planned. In the evening, they would only do some, wanted to do some kind of jam and all of those things. But they immediately created, an informal structure. And they said, okay, for 2 hours, we are going to have some team building activity. So it's completely unstructured, unplanned, spur of the moment, the need came and you completely got that done. Okay, so those are called as your informal training. Then comes your formal training. So these are some training methods, and they are characterized by advanced planning, of course. They are not something that can happen within a day or two. It requires a lot of pre-planning, a lot of pre-work, a lot of logistic arrangement, So all of that, it's a very structured format. So whoever is a participant in this training are also aware, and the people who are organizing are also very, very clear about it. So it's very structured. So there are two types of it. Either it will be on the job, or it can be off the job as well. On the job meaning while you are on the job, you've been done. Like I remember last week I was doing a program for personal effectiveness for the individual contributors of a BFSI sector. And it was on a virtual platform. But at the same time, I have seen that while they were switching off from video and off video mode, they were just dealing with their customers as well. They were attending some of the queries, customer queries as well. So they were on their desk, they were on their headphones, and they were doing the training, but at the same time, they were also continuing with their regular life cycle. And there's another one where it's just completely off the job. You're not on the job. You've been taken into out location. Say, for example, you've been sent to the regional office and you need to work from the field to understand what it takes, what it works. You're not a field resource, but you have been exposed to the field simulation so that you understand what happens there. And then you come back afresh, learning what happens in the field, what happens in the real life. And then you come back and apply it at the head office. Okay, so that is your off the job training. So those are the two types, or the on the job and off the job. Thank you so much.